Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey, After Buzzers, the MasterChef After Show is back. On this episode, we're breaking down episodes 2 and 3. We're finding out the final 10 people that are competing as the top 20 for the White Chef aprons, and then also our first elimination show. Let's do this.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah, look at this. A little, little Katy Perry to lead us off here in the MasterChef After Show. That's all thanks to our engineer, James.
Thank you, James.
He pretends he's not a huge Katy Perry fan, but he had that knowledge right on the top of his tongue.
He knows every
top
song.
Of his tongue, tip of his tongue, top of his head. Like a bat. Yes.
I was following you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the MasterChef After Show. Thanks for sticking with us. I know we took last week off due to some logistical scheduling parts on our end, but we are back. And because of that, we're going to be covering episodes 2 and 3 this week.
Out.
Yes. So we don't have the full panel united yet. Robin McSweeney, she is staying true to her Twitter handle, B Stays Busy.
Yeah.
She is on assignment right now, but she'll be back in just a couple weeks to rejoin the panel here as we break down this entire season of MasterChef. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie. But the reason that we're all here is
I was like, so I'm like trying to get our chat up.
Is the lady who not only cooks such delicious food, but
which
is
I don't
just
have
delight
for you today.
That's fine. I'm only slightly holding that against you.
Oh, okay.
But is a delight to talk to about everything, including food, Maria Provenzano.
Yes, hello. I am Maria Provenzano. You can find me at Maria Provenzano on Twitter, and all my information will be there. And my son didn't have school today, so on top of trying to work, I work from home. And I had that, and then a crazy toddler. So baking did not happen, which it normally does. So I'm sorry.
I'm fine with that.
Next week.
It's okay. It's okay.
Frank's very sad.
So yeah, like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow AfterBuzz TV on Twitter. Also, jump on the YouTube. Follow us there on the chat room as well. Marie has it up and running, so you can just chime in about your thoughts about MasterChef, these episodes 2 and 3. What do you think of the top 20 contestants? What do you think of the first elimination episode with Wolfgang Puck? And we're going to break it all down right now.
I was excited about Wolfgang Puck.
Yes.
Yeah, I was really excited. Sorry, I was still take off. But yeah, excited.
So, well, I guess before we get to Wolfgang Puck, we had to figure out who our final 10 contestants are to make up our top 20.
Mm-hmm.
So episode 2 was doing that, narrowing down all those potential candidates. And we started off with the Battle of the Tacos.
Yes.
With Tequila, who's a nail professional from Chicago. Nails is her food, or nails are her life, but food is her passion.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what a treat. And then we had Dan, who I will say, I thought he was a dum-dum. I was not a big fan of him.
Yeah, neither is anybody on our chat.
Oh, man. Because his first line is, I'm about to shoot this tequila home with a slice of lime. Like, oh, this line. Could he be any more cheesy?
Yeah, I know.
He's the social chair of his fraternity. And if you cook a girl dinner, you may end up cooking her breakfast as well.
Like, you wouldn't be cooking me breakfast.
Boom! Yes.
I don't know. Even when I was in college, I didn't like frat guys. But like the stereotypical frat guy, you know?
Now, just taking away his stereotypical frat guy-ness,
yes.
The concept, if a man cooks you dinner, does that make him more attractive to you?
I don't know, because the kitchen's really my domain.
Ah,
I don't
okay.
share well. But so I don't know. But I mean, I grew up with a grandfather who cooked, but my mom cooked and my dad didn't. So I don't know. I mean, I've never dated a guy who cooked. So I guess I just don't know. And my husband does not cook.
Ah,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, is that just like by interest, or it's like, no, this is my area?
I kind of just took over.
Yes.
He would probably help if I like he grills.
Okay.
Do you cook?
I cook some things. I feel like I cook a few things well. And
like,
then, but I make the best scrambled eggs, and I will challenge anybody on that.
I will challenge you on that.
Oh, all right. We've got a scrambled eggs off there. I love
Wait,
it.
Wait, so
yes.
What makes your scrambled eggs so good?
Because I, well, let's
love.
See. Love. It's love, guys. That's funny. That's a special ingredient. cheese, garlic,
Garlic. Okay.
Yes. Black beans.
Okay.
And a few other seasonings as well.
I'm intrigued. This is why. Gordon Ramsay, eggs are, if anybody, like, you study in culinary school, one of the first things you study is eggs, because there's so much you can do, like, from a beautiful meringue to, you know, oh my gosh, what is the sauce I'm looking for? I'm not gonna be able to think of it. Hollandaise too. Mm. Hollandaise is another one, because it's, it can make things like a mayo, like, you can't do it without egg yolks. Emulsifies it, but there's a sauce I'm not going to think of right now. But anyways, there's about a bajillion things you can do with eggs. But like scrambled eggs and omelets are they seem easy, but they're so technical to do it like the most proper way. So that's why I'm like, what's the technique? Do you scramble them first? Do you put them in?
I scramble them first. What was that?
Guys make your eggs? By the way, let us know.
That's right. Yeah, hot chat room talk, guys. I think I learned that from Gordon Ramsay, where it's like you save the salt until the end because it changes the color of the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I learned that from
him. Well, it like coagulates them, so it just makes them like break down where you don't want them to.
Yeah.
So then you want them in the end. You want the salt in the end. But
so that was what I learned. So I changed, because I'd always put everything right in away, and then I'd you know, whip the eggs and then start scrambling them up.
Okay.
But then I'd like, all right, you know what? I'm going to save the salt until the end and then just put that in.
Butter or oil?
I use canola oil.
Okay.
Yes, I feel like.
Yep. Judging you right
judging
now.
Me. She's judging me.
Okay.
You know, I'm not saying that they're technically
but those
on point.
You have a specialty.
Yes,
okay,
deliciously on point. I will say that.
Let me tell you, just to say it, two things that make eggs really good. Well, but I would say more than two, but butter, strictly butter, low heat, and you move it around a bunch, almost like you do a risotto. Continuously stir.
Okay.
And because it's a protein, low and slow kind of thing, and it makes it not stiffen up. And then finish it with sour cream.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, it will change your life, people. I will have a post up soon. I'm perfecting breakfast tacos.
Ooh.
And I like a really creamy, rich egg, and then I add it with like some like peppers and onions. This is totally not about MasterChef, but we will get back. Anyways, with some other things that are spicy, and that's what makes. Yeah, so I will have that up.
Because I know some people also will put milk in there, too.
Yeah, you can do milk.
You'd rather skip the milk and just do sour cream at the end?
At the end, yeah. I mean, you would, if you did milk, you'd do it before you put it in. I think that would be fine, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not your jam.
That's not how I do it, though.
Yeah, gotcha.
But you could.
But you could. But you, if you're doing it wrong, you would do that, according
no,
to Maria.
No. You have to make food the way you like it. But... Egg challenge would be very interesting.
Oh, yes. I think if you just, you would be easily able to tell which one was Maria's and which one was mine by looking at the plate, for sure. And the last thing about Dan is he said, I'm about to haze this competition, which I was like, oh, please let this guy lose. Please let him. But the challenge, as I said, was the Battle of the Tacos. Dan did, he did a beer-battered fish taco with pico de gallo with a lime crema, which I always like when they say crema. That always makes it sound a little bit classier.
Well, it's Spanish.
Hmm. We.
Did you take Spanish or French? But you know what I did like was his presentation. And
yes.
Because when it comes to tacos, you know, you could either leave them completely, if they're soft, you know, leave them completely open. But I liked how he had them setting up with limes on the side. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I thought he was
totally going to steal it.
Surprisingly,
totally.
Yeah, he had a good plating there. But I did like his, he tried to rope Gordon into his way of thinking. It was like, the best way to turn your woman on is to turn your stove on. Guys like us know that.
He's like,
right, Gordon?
Yeah.
Like, Gordon's like, don't get me involved.
Yeah.
But then Tequila, she did jerk chicken tacos and cornbread waffles, which the cornbread waffles seemed really intriguing to me.
Yeah, I looking at them, I mean, if they're paired with the right thing, maybe, but they looked really heavy to me.
Yeah.
That was my opinion.
And it felt like I could understand why the criticism against her was like, you know, don't do too many things. Just focus on doing one thing really well.
Exactly. And I think sometimes if you have too many things. And it was a taco challenge. It wasn't like a chicken and waffle type of challenge. It was a taco. And I just think she wanted to show another skill. And I get that. But it wasn't the right time to do it.
No. So, and they already had some, even though I guess it turned out all right, but they were really questioning putting her the jerk seasoning rub in water.
Yeah. And I can see. And so a lot of times, like when I do make tacos and I add my taco seasoning, I add water to it to make a sauce. And it kind of helps spread all over it. But I don't know if I would do that with meat. I do that when I'm cooking the veggies.
Okay. Yeah. I
thought that was kind of strange too. Yeah.
It did seem weird, but at least her chicken was moist. So I'll give her that.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Adding any kind of, like, when you steam it a little bit, as long as you already have created the brown on it for flavor. Mm-hmm. If you add the, I could see how that could make it like so it didn't get tough.
Yeah, I mean, and they seemed like both of them, but ultimately Dan wins. So we get several more episodes with this guy.
Who is excited?
Not me. But then we come to my favorite challenge, and that was the Battle of the Burger. We had Zach from Belleville, Michigan. He's a construction worker.
I really liked him. I'm a Michigan girl.
But you know, enough that he shows up there in a tank top, and he does way too much flexing.
I think they probably ask him to do that.
You show up in a tank. Hey, Zach, you can be here, but you got to be in a tank. Great, thanks.
Because he's a construction worker, and that was, you know, they want him to be more like themey. I think so.
I guess, but I feel like there's that fine line of like appropriate things to wear to like a MasterChef competition, like a tank top, way too casual. Yeah. But like there was Nathan or whatever that later on in the second episode who's wearing the jacket with the bow tie.
Yeah,
like whoa, you don't need to wear all this.
I would just be so claustrophobic. Yeah, but then I'd feel naked in the tank top. So I don't know. I still thought the two and the whole mom thing really, like, I was, like, crying watching the thing.
Oh.
I was sitting here in the AfterBuzz Studios. I was like, I hope my son says that about me one day.
They're very much mama's boys.
And that's okay.
Yes. And the other, he's going up against Alejandro, a voiceover artist.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, that was mm-hmm. different there. And they were making burgers. So Alejandro was doing the hamburger with everything, something mm-hmm. he learned from his mom, of course. Yucca fries, and it was patty cheese,
smoked
ketchup.
Smoked ham.
Yeah, mustard,
cabbage.
Garlic mayo. Yeah, a lot of great
stuff
in there.
Yeah.
Me, personally, I'm not a fan of egg on my burger. I know many people are.
I could give or take. Yeah. I wouldn't order a burger just because it had egg on it. Would you guys? How do you normally like your burger?
I like my burger sans egg. And I'm not a bacon guy. I'm not.
Oh, really?
I'm not a huge bacon with my burger, so I'm great with that. I'm all about like the seasoning of the meat. The mm-hmm, meat. It's mm-hmm. got to be seasoned. Mm-hmm. If it's not, then it's just disappointing.
You know what I do like on burgers, which I never have because I just feel so guilty if I have it, but some kind of like a mayo or aioli or something, which aioli yes. is glorified mayo, but something like a saucy like that. And now I don't know if I would do spice on a burger, maybe the jalapenos, but that's like super indulgent.
Oh,
like
so
that,
good.
That's like the, I haven't had McDonald's in probably 15 years, but like just like that sauce that they put on their like whatever the what's the
Big Mac?
Big Mac?
Like
oh my god!
All right, Maria.
But from what I hear, it's like a Thousand Island, and there's some companies that make like a sandwich sauce that's supposed to be similar to that I've gotten, and it's sort of mayo-y but tomato-y, and it's luscious and amazing.
So, have you not been to In-N-Out?
You know what? I was at In-N-Out one time when I was like 22, which was 3 years ago. And so I have not had it since I moved back to LA. So I was interning out here like when I was in college. And so I've been in LA for almost 8 years and I haven't had it since. So we should do a day at
yes,
In-N-Out.
Oh my goodness.
I used to work at In-N-Out, so I know all the tricks in the trade.
Oh, James, what tip can you give us?
They'll make whatever you want pretty much.
Ah.
So what? Like,
don't they have like a secret sauce or something?
Well, they have a spread is what they call their sauce. It's similar to a Thousand Island dressing.
Okay, see.
But there's like different styles, like animal style is like fried mustard on your burger.
Mm. Oh, I like
pickles and grilled okay. onions. And then there's like protein style where there's no bun and it's wrapped in lettuce instead. But my favorite burger is a teriyaki burger with pineapple chutney.
Oh, yum.
And they're making that at In-N-Out now?
They do not, but I make that at home.
Oh, you make right. that. James, so you cook?
Not like you cook, but...
Well, I don't know. That sounds pretty impressive.
All right, so at In-N-Out, what was the biggest burger you made for anybody? Like, how many patties?
Okay, back when I worked there was years ago, and it was before they were, like, regulated to where they can only make a 4-patty now is the highest they'll go. But when I worked there, I watched someone order a 10x10.
Oh, jeez.
And I'd heard stories of, like, college fraternities hazing their freshmen with, like, we're going to order a 50x50 and you guys have to eat it.
I wouldn't find that. That'd be a great. I'd love to be hazed like that.
So hazed with food.
It's literally like the white box that they put your order in, and one side has a bun and the bottom has a bun and the rest is just like cheese and
just ooze
and scrub.
Oh my god.
And like literally they had to stop making that big a burger because someone put the video on YouTube.
Oh.
And it's supposed to be quality, right? And they were like, nope, no more of that.
Oh, so they cap it at 4x4. That's a shame. 4? Come on. All right, In-N-Out. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
We'll go there and we'll get 4x4.
Okay,
so how about that?
There you go. I will eat a bite. I'm like, I can have one patty.
That's it?
I'm small. I'm barely 5 feet tall. My stomach is not that big. So I can eat a burger, but it's like I can't eat 4 burgers.
Well, it's only one bun. So, I mean, it's, you know.
So it's technically,
it's
one,
technically
burger.
One burger. Yeah.
Anyways, back to the show. Thank
yes.
you, James.
That was your In-N-Out moment with James. We'll do that every show. A little special In-N-Out moment with James. Then we get old Zach. He made a black and blue cheeseburger there mm-hmm. with a black and patties of blue cheese on the inside.
It's very ambitious because it's a lot of heavy flavors.
As they're saying, it could be really overly salty.
Yeah.
For sure. Unless you get that balance right. And then he had some grilled jalapenos, raw onion, and then jalapeno fried onion strings. So really focusing on the heat and the intense flavors for that. I don't know. I mean, I was more... It seemed like intriguing, although I'm not a huge blue cheese fan. I still was intrigued because I do like jalapenos and the spiciness factor.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it was just, as Gordon was saying, like it was just too much heat the whole way around.
Yeah, you got to have the different levels. I don't even know how to like wrap my head around it. I just feel like both of them were just too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the part that really kind of bummed me out because they said they really enjoyed both their burgers, but before they could make a decision, they knew that they both brought their mothers.
Yeah.
And they had them go get their mothers and bring them in.
I didn't like that. Did you guys like that? I just didn't like that.
Because I think if you're going to bring both mothers in, then you're going to break the rules and you're going to let both of them go through. Because why are you going to bring one other mother in and just let her watch her son not get
selected?
That was
weird. They like a lot of cheese on their burgers.
Yes. Lots of cheese.
Yeah, that was kind of like, I don't know. I just thought that was unnecessary. They wanted to create some kind of emotion, like, oh, I feel so bad for him. And I did. I was really sad for him. But it was just, I didn't like that.
Yeah, so unfortunately, Zach does not make it through. Mm-hmm. Alejandro does, so he goes through. The next round is shrimp and grits.
This was a good one.
Four people. I was not a huge fan of Brittany right off the bat when her first thing is, I win everything, so this is no different.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, Brittany, enough with
down,
you.
Calm down, Brittany.
But we had...
and I'm throwing things.
Uh-oh, Brittany's
she got me all heated.
Brittany's ghost is attacking.
We had
Nico from Detroit competing. She was a manicurist and a psychic, and she knows there's a
white... very bad psychic.
Yeah, she knows there's a white apron in her future because her ancestors told her so.
Yeah.
And then
they lied to you.
We had Tenoria, a credit union coordinator from Chattanooga.
Who I love.
Yeah.
And I want her to be my best friend.
She really just simple home style, basic cooking there. Just really traditional.
Yeah.
Then we had Sean, a restaurant manager from Vegas, and Brittany, a server, my favorite, from New Hartford, New York.
Mm-hmm.
All shrimp and grits, a lot of different styles. I mean, out of all of them, Tenoria was the only one that just did simple, traditional shrimp and grits executed just
beautifully. Well, that's the thing. If you're going to do the classic, like, you got to hit the nail on the head. And that's what they said, too.
Yes.
And I watched her make this, and I wanted to have it. It looked so amazing to me. And they're like, what's the secret to grits? I literally made grits last night, but I made Italian style. And it was funny because they're like, the secret is really making a stock. I add milk to mine, but milk and stock. But I do Parmesan if I make them Italian.
Ooh.
And so she, I don't know, she didn't add cheese, I don't believe. It was just butter and milk.
Yes.
And then like a stock. I don't think they said which stock she had. But it looked, I mean, in the flavor, she had the andouille sausage, which is very classic Creole. Like, it looked amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, you see Christina's face just as she's eating it. Just like, take that bite. Oh, yes. And, I mean, kudos. Gordon Ramsay says, like, that's going to go down in history as the best
awesome.
Shrimp and grits dish.
Very cool. Yeah, like, kudos to her.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
It's always interesting when they can, you know, and I wonder how accurate it is where they, and we'll find out, I guess, this season, but when they say you're going to be a tough one to beat just based off of one dish.
That's tough because it's like your specialty. So are you, you know, can you do a lot of different things as well? But I don't know. There was something about her that I really liked. She seemed very sweet. So I thought personality-wise,
yes.
I liked her.
Yeah, I I like her the best. Because for me, I don't need a lot of people that are talking a lot of smack in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if you're cooking good
just
food.
Just be good.
Yeah, just be good. Let your food speak for itself.
I was going to ask me what's Italian style. So Italian style, polenta, grits, sort of the same thing. And it's kind of like same in the South. It was sort of like peasant food. The way I make them is, whatever the ratio is on the bag, don't buy instant grits. No, have you seen my cousin Vinny? No self-respecting Southerner makes instant grits. Neither do Italians. So, but I like Bob's Red Mill. They're just like a regular grit. But I do half stock, like either veggie or chicken, whatever I have, half milk. And then you slowly add in the grits and then you add in Parmesan cheese. So I like to serve it with like roasted tomatoes or something to make if you're making it like Italian and like parsley or something like that, and then top it with whatever you want. But it's a really great side to have. So that is what Italian style grits are.
Ooh. Now, Sean, for as much as I got a restaurateur from Vegas, I did like the concept of his dish.
I did too.
You know, the sweet and smoky shrimp there with blackened shrimp and roasted corn.
Mm-hmm.
But he botched the shrimp.
Yeah.
Which, it feels like that. If you can't get the shrimp right, what's the point?
Yeah, shrimp, they're like, They cook like that, so.
And then we had Brittany, who wasn't my favorite, but she did Italian shrimp.
She did Italian style, like everything, yeah.
A Verblanc with green onions and beer, and she did a fried grit cake.
What was funny, not much of that spoke Italian to me, though. It was a different, take on it, but I was like, what was Italian about it? Used beer. Beer's not Italian. Wine's Italian. Maybe if you did, a red wine reduction or something like that, okay, but I didn't get the Italian thing. It was an interesting take on it, though.
And I don't think there was any doubt who was going to for sure win out of the four.
Yeah.
And that was Tenoria. She easily won. Mm-hmm. But on their comments, I figured as much as I wasn't a fan of Brittany, she made the least amount of mistakes out of the other three.
Yeah.
So it was no surprise to see her come out with the other eight.
Yeah. And she took a risk making it really different. So that was the least interesting.
Yeah. And then we had a little montage of some of the other people that didn't get a white apron. And then we had one last spot. It was Sean, a Vegas DJ. And James, a truck driver from North Vegas.
Yes.
Competing there against Surf and Turf.
Yes.
Both very emotionally invested. Sean, really wanted to do this for his dad, who had passed away a few years ago and just loved his cooking. And James, passionate truck driver who, doesn't want to drive. Truck driving is not my passion of cooking. It's I don't know. It'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that's truck driving. Absolutely. My number one passion in life.
I would be the worst truck driver ever. I would fall asleep.
Yeah, for sure.
Seriously, I think it's actually, I don't know how they stay awake as long as they do. I think it'd actually be very difficult.
But I like to set up. Brought a little walk,
True.
He was set to
good
go.
Good for him.
So they did surf and turf, and Sean did New School Vegas Surf and Turf. He topped it with foie gras and a bone marrow Verblanc. The Verblanc getting a lot of play this episode.
Yeah. Well, Verblanc is a sauce that you can add to just about anything. It's butter.
Would you do a bone marrow Verblanc?
I don't think I would ever think of a bone marrow Verblanc. Bone marrow is not... Have you had bone marrow?
I have not.
It's good. It's just very rich and fatty, but it's definitely really, really good when done correctly. I would never think to put it in a beurre blanc. I don't know. I just feel like that's too much fat, and that's what Gordon Ramsay said. The whole thing when he was making it, to have bone marrow and foie gras in the same dish seems like so and a red meat just seems so much like richness and fattiness, and there's nothing that was cutting it. Beurre blanc would be what was supposed to cut it, and the beurre blanc is so rich because beurre blanc can have the acidity in it, because that's what it basically, the acid works on the butter, and that's what kind of gives it all that flavor. But then when you're adding another fat in, it's just masking everything.
Sounds a little rich for my blood, which I feel like Gordon was saying, as you mentioned, Maria. And then we had James. He did the seared ribeye with butter poached lobster with grill marks. Got to have those grill marks. And a Cajun shrimp ball.
I actually thought that looked really good.
Yeah, it looked intriguing.
It
seemed like one of those things where it's like, much like last episode, there are those ones where people went head-to-head where you liked both dishes and they were both talented, and it was a shame that the way this was structured, only one could move on.
Sean's just lucky he made it to the end. It was 5-4, then he was plate, 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 and then he was done.
Yeah, he started plating with just a hair over 25 seconds. That was amazing. It's just one of those guys who just stresses you out to watch him cook.
Yeah.
And it's
I was stressed out watching that.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a tough call. It was a split decision.
Yeah.
But in the end, Sean just edged him out.
Mm.
So then we have our 20. Look at that. 20 people are MasterChefs. And we got right into it. We go into episode 3. Wolfgang Puck. Not a big spoiler. His name is right there in the title about who's going to be the special chef. Now, as they say this year, because there's only two of the judges now with Graham Elliott stepping it down and not being a judge this season, they're going to be having a rotating selection of other...
Which is cool.
Yes, chefs coming in to lend their expertise and their talents and their passion and judges competition. So yeah. That's cool to kind of get every week to kind of get a different outlook from a different well-renowned chef.
I think it's awesome. Yeah. I love that, especially... Well, like someone like Wolfgang Puck, I hope they have Thomas Keller because I love him. Oh, but I love you, Thomas Keller. call me. No, I'm just kidding. I'm married. But anyway.
Can you still call just to say hi?
Just chat. Call to say hi and like teach me everything you know in life. But no, Wolfgang Puck, I love that.
Recipes.
Yeah, I have a couple of his cookbooks, so hopefully I can just make my way through those. But anyway, so yeah, no, I like seeing Wolfgang Puck. And I mean, obviously one of the most... well-known restaurateurs and chefs, I think, of our time, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the first thing that pops my mind when I think of him is Spago and then the Academy Awards.
Exactly. I sound cooler than I am, but I'm really not cool. My parents had taken me to Spago for my birth. They always come visit me for my birthday, and we get to go to, like, that's like when I get to go to a nice restaurant. And so we went to Spago at Wolfgang Puck. This is years ago now, but and actually he was there that night, so I got to meet him. Yeah,
that's
so
awesome.
I have a picture with him. It's probably on my Facebook page. Too bad we didn't have that here.
That's very cool.
But yeah, so I have a picture of me and my mom with Wolfgang Puck, because he walks around to all the tables and like
gets
pictures with everybody. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
See, I'm not cool. He has, like, there's a bajillion other people who have pictures with him, but it was a really cool experience to be at the restaurant and the night he's there cooking. So one of the best culinary experiences I've ever had.
So I feel like you have enough of a relationship you can get him to sit in here for one of the episodes. The right, Maria? You got an in? You got an in with Wolfgang.
Yeah. I do.
Okay,
hi, Wolfgang.
Great.
You call me too.
So we start off, we get a little bit of a smack talk from Bill, a retired golf player, 62.
Yeah.
And he's going to kick out all these young kids. Sounds ominous, Bill. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then we bring in Wolfgang Puck to start the competition here. And we started off with the MasterChef Mystery Box, one of the favorite challenges there. So we just see everybody's got a box right there on their cooking station. And we lift it up, and there's always going to be some sort of mysterious ingredient that they're going to have to use to execute their dish. In this case, it was chosen by Wolfgang, and it is potatoes.
Potatoes.
A lot of potatoes.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. Just I always wonder about like prepping those mystery boxes, just for the crew when they're putting them together.
Yeah, they it looked beautiful. Like all the different like they looked like they had grown out of the ground instead of like the grocery store where they're all the same size.
Yes.
Like they looked really rustic and beautiful.
It
different colors and
really well done. And so that's a competition. You've got to use a variety of these different potatoes in your dish, and you also have some assistance from some of the other goods in the MasterChef pantry to be able to bring your dish to life.
Don't you guys think that pantry would be so much fun to play in?
Oh man, I guess that's a make or break in those moments. There's like, how good are you under pressure to get only 5 minutes inside that pantry and be able to pull all the ingredients you need confidently?
I watched this and I'm like, I don't know if I would be able to handle this.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Well, there's even like that show, Cutthroat Kitchen, on the Food Network.
Oh, no, I would be terrible.
Where you get
at that.
1 minute inside that pantry to pull everything you possibly could use.
Well, and then, of course, Cutthroat Kitchen is, they have like a mod podge of what you have to cook with, too.
Yeah. But I mean, you see how challenging it is, because there's so many times that people, I mean, chefs.
They're stumped,
Or they come out and they go like, oh my gosh, I forgot the one thing that I need to actually make this dish.
Yeah.
And it's, I've stupidly left it inside the pantry.
Yeah.
So not always easy under pressure to be able to pull everything that you need.
No.
Now, as they start cooking, they get 1 hour to cook, but Gordon stops with 10 minutes left on the clock and says, hey, guess what, guys? I'm stopping you right now just to give you a heads up that it's not just going to be deciding who's going to get control of the elimination challenge. We're also going to eliminate one chef right after this first challenge. So pressure's already on from that. If you weren't already sweating it out to know that somebody's going to go home at the end of this, not good.
No.
And I feel like the only thing that's frustrating, though, is by 10 minutes left, I feel like, you know, your course is pretty much sunk. I mean, if you're not heading in a good direction, I don't know if like 10 minutes is enough to save you.
10 minutes could also break you at the end. Like if you are waiting till the very end, like 10 minutes, if you're making something like shrimp or something that cooks really quickly and you want to do it at the very end, then you overdo it or you don't do it long enough. I mean, so 10 minutes, it really could. I mean, unless you've been failing like miserably the whole time, then yes. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think every minute counts in this.
Well, one person that definitely could use more minutes is Sean, because again, we see him racing to get this done in time. And he originally wanted to do a sweet potato gnocchi, and he had to just switch to a sweet potato ravioli because he's already falling behind. And he's just sitting there, just, you know, flap sweating, just moving around. I don't know if I'm going to get this done in time. I got to get something on the plate. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I'm going to get really tired of Sean. If this seems to be his modus operandi,
I already am like a cringe thinking about it. Like, it makes my skin crawl. And in our chat, they're saying, "Was shocked no shepherd's pie." That's a good call. You know what? I didn't think about shepherd's pie.
Yeah.
Which is a really good classic potato dish. You know what? This is Lee Jen. You and I should be friends. Because that is really, really smart. Shepherd's pie. You're right. That's very smart. And it could be somewhat safe, too, because you kind of like, you know, you have it with some other ingredients. So as long as you can make like a mashed potato really well, you put it on top of like some really nicely flavored meat and some veggies inside. Like, you could actually, it might have, maybe it's just because it was that. I have my phone behind me. It's not smart. I almost knocked it over. But maybe it's because of the 1 hour. So it might have needed more time than an hour. But yeah, maybe mini shepherd's pies or something like that. But that's a good call.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Anyway, sorry, back to Sean.
Oh, no. But I'm thinking with Sean, like, if we've already seen him twice in a row in these challenges, like, you know, really sweating to get down to the wire.
Calm down.
I feel like, is it just time management for something like that? You're just not really managing your time properly.
I think he's just a head case. Like, I mean, I think he's just like, that's just personality. I don't know. We'll see. We'll just have to see. But time management for sure.
Yeah, I just,
time management's one of the hardest things when cooking a meal, though, is making sure everything's done all at the same time and it's cooked with, like, you know, that's probably the hard, in my opinion. So let me know what you guys think. But
does it make it easier or harder depending on how many chefs? Like, if you start increasing the number of chefs in the kitchen, you're all trying to get your meal timed out properly. Does it, the more people you add to a kitchen, does it make it harder to get everything timed out?
You mean like making the same dish?
Or no, like if you're all like making parts of a dish. Like,
that would be.
Like,
I mean, like on Hell's Kitchen, if everybody's making, but I mean, you got to learn, that's team. That's teamwork then, if everybody's working together. And I think it's just it's experience, knowing how long it takes to make risotto. Back to Hell's Kitchen, risotto and what is it? What are the other staples in Hell's Kitchen? Risotto and
scallops.
Why can I think of what it's called? Scallops.
Yes.
And the steak and the pastry. Oh my gosh!
Oh yeah.
You guys.
The oh my gosh. The
why am I can't I can't think of words.
Yes.
Can you guys think of it?
The pastry and with the meat and you cut
what
it.
The heck, and you slice guys. It open. I like look it up. What is it?
Beef Wellington.
Thank you.
Yes, the wellies. The wellies, guys.
Wellies, why?
We blanked on the wellies.
This is my like mommy brain for the day. It's because I spent a whole day with a toddler. That's why. Anyways, yeah.
And then also we see Nathan, as I mentioned before, cooking in his jacket and bow tie. Come on now.
I know, but he kind of has like me have a special place in my heart for him.
But just, you know, man, just take off the jacket at least.
Okay.
Take off the jacket at least.
Yeah.
So they finish the challenge. Time runs out. And they come on. Gordon really just, you know, starts them off on the great foot. And, you know, the three dishes blew us away with how awful they were. So they're going to bring those three chefs up, taste their dishes, and then one of those guys is going to be going home. The first person they bring up is Nathan, our jacket and bow tie guy. He did a twice-baked potato with caramelized onion and bacon with purple potato cauliflower puree.
It sounds good.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and I mean, Wolfgang kind of, you know, just gave him a little tough love, definitely.
Said you're immature, right?
Yeah, immature.
Or it was immature.
Yeah, and then he had to look around. What's it say up there? Master Chef. You know, what does that mean? And, you know, you got to step it up if you want to stick around here.
Yeah.
Definitely a little tough love moment for Nathan. But then we had Cassie, who, as she says, had no intention of ever being in the bottom three in this competition, which I think is, that's way too much.
No one has the intention to be in the bottom three.
And there's no way you can, I don't think, there's very rarely anybody that doesn't ever get to the bottom three. Just, you know, even the best chefs will have their one off day.
Yeah, bad day.
But she does a New York strip steak over a fried potato salad, which...
Yeah, when I saw her making it, I don't know. I was just kind of confused. I mean, if you're going to make potato salad, it better be good potato salad.
But like fried potato salad.
Fried potatoes.
That just did not.
That's like French fries with like mayo on it.
Yeah, that did not seem appealing. And I feel like it seemed like to be their criticism. It was a very ordinary dish, and it was just like the steak was, it seemed to be more of the star of it than the potatoes.
Yeah, right. And the potato was supposed to be the star.
And then we had Bill, our old guy there. He did potato pancakes with bacon. That, I mean, I just like I felt like I was just seeing something I might get. And no slam to Waffle House; they have a lot of great food there. It's great, like, you know, you're traveling around stuff. But I felt like that's if you ordered
yeah,
that,
yeah, supposed to be gourmet.
Yeah, you was like, boom, you'd get that right there at Waffle House. I mean, yeah. just even from down to the way it was plated, just yeah. right the you know the potato pancake right in the center and the strips of bacon right there on the sides.
Yeah. It's a little too old school, right?
I feel so. I mean, you know, it's just like I can't imagine you want to go into MasterChef knowing you're supposed to be one of the top 20 chefs, home cooks in America.
Right.
And you're going to come in with that?
Yeah.
That just seems like you really, you're selling yourself incredibly short.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really misjudging yeah. the level of quality of the competitors.
Right. Well, that's, I agree. I mean, it's they didn't show him getting into this the show. Like what his competition was to get into the show to the top 20.
Yeah,
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
No,
right?
he was one of the montage people.
Yeah,
from
montage
the first episode.
People. Like we didn't see the actual his competition. So I wonder how that was. Like if you know. So I think the thing about this season about how you got into the final 20 was also interesting too, because I feel like there's a lot of really good people who were head to head with each other. So did they really pick the top 20 of everybody? You know, should they have had everybody compete against each other? And then pick the top 20, or the way they did it, where it's sort of like, yes, it like weeds people out, but the like, for instance, like you know, Zach could have been better than Bill or whatever,
yeah, or
you know what
Sean
I mean?
From or James.
Yeah, so it's just so you just yeah. So you just never know. I mean, that's where I wasn't. I liked seeing this instant competition, but I don't know if it was the best way to pick out the top people. So let me know if you think that's true or what.
Because I feel like
they go potato pancakes. Ugh.
Because like with Tenoria, I mean, they as Gordon says, like she's going to be a tough competitor in this mm-hmm. competition, mm-hmm. basing that just off her execution of that dish. But then you wonder with Bill, did they have that same kind of inclination,
right,
or he's
right.
just a guy that was just a one hit wonder?
And did he like who was he up against?
Yeah.
So that's where, and what was it? you know
to,
what I mean?
Yeah, because you may have like a specialty, whatever
like
it is.
Waffle
may have been.
House something.
Yeah. But then you push them outside of that, and it's, you know, you're not going to see your best. You're going
right.
to see somebody just not really challenging themselves, trying to elevate any kind of dish.
Mm-hmm.
That just seemed like a crucial mistake on Bill's part. How could you?
Yeah, I don't know.
Now that I felt bad for Bill bringing that up, and I mean they really did not spare him anything. It's like this is the best you could do.
Yeah.
And this is not really MasterChef quality
right,
whatsoever.
Right, right.
But Bill decided, as ordinary as that dish was, Cassie was the one mm-hmm. set packing. The one that she said she had a goal of never being in the bottom three out right away.
I kind of felt bad though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I guess
you're like Frank does not feel bad.
No, I didn't feel that bad about Cassie leaving. And I was just like, she was a little too airy, a little too cocky.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was like, yeah, okay, bye, Cassie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I, whatever. Well, plus, because she said she was a self-taught baker from Iowa. So my thought was like, how do you really think you're going to win this competition? I just don't think as a self-taught baker, if you're coming in with that skill set, I just don't think you can go far enough.
I mean, if baking is your specialty, this is 95% cooking.
Yeah.
It could be tough.
95% cooking, and then you're lucky if you make it to the elimination challenges, which seems to lean more towards the baking competitions.
Oh,
soufflés,
okay.
Cakes, pies, things like that, pastry dishes,
yeah,
things
yeah,
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Occasionally they'll do like either cupcakes or donuts. Sometimes they'll do a MasterChef. They'll do some kind of baking challenge.
Okay.
One of those.
Donuts would be tough because you need all that time for it to rise.
Yeah.
How do they do that?
They already have cupcakes. They've always done cupcakes.
Yeah. Okay, cupcakes I can see. Donuts, you have to let them rise twice, and it takes like 2 hours to let them rise.
They're so good.
Like those are if they're yeasted donuts. You can do like just regular baked donuts, which is basically like a cupcake in the shape of a donut.
Like a faux nut?
A faux nut.
Yes, there you go. So we send Carrie packing, and the winner of this is Andrea, the young girl mm-hmm. who's just like way too dancy and jiggy and
she,
all that stuff. Yeah, she just got her...
Frank just said, did you say jiggity or jiggy?
Jiggy.
Jiggy.
Dancing a jig, yeah.
That was some really good dancing.
Thank you. That was just like, yeah, look at that. Woo!
I'm
going on So You Think You Can Dance.
James, help me here.
No,
I'm just kidding.
What? All right. Fine, Maria. Yeah, but she ended up winning. She took the dish, so I'll give it up for her. And she had two advantages. One is that she doesn't have to cook in the elimination challenge.
Yes, which
and,
is nice. Yeah,
yeah, that's a nice deal. I feel like you're very, very much spared. You don't have to sweat it out. And then two, sometimes you get a chance to pick the item that everybody else will be cooking with or if you have like three different options, you can choose one thing, or you can maybe like select what certain mm-hmm. groups of people we have to use to cook in that elimination challenge. This time, Andrea's advantage was that she could either save all the men or all of the women in this contest.
What are you going to pick, really?
Yeah.
You know she's going to pick the women.
She chose all the women. Yep. And the test, which is, I always love this when they do this in Hell's Kitchen, and they did it here on MasterChef, is where Gordon Ramsay was going to make a highly technical dish,
mm-hmm.
and the guys had to replicate it as best as possible. Gordon would make it in front of them, he would not tell them what any of the ingredients are, and then after he finished, they would get a chance to eat it and taste it, mm-hmm. and based on that, just by watching and tasting, guess what he used for all the ingredients, and then try to replicate that dish.
I would love to have Gordon Ramsay's food. I've never gone to any of those restaurants or anything like that. So I think that would be really cool.
How good do you think you'd be at this challenge? Do you think you could either watch Gordon Ramsay
That's
right in front of you?
That's a great question.
Because if it was scrambled eggs, you know, I'd nail it because I don't want to eat eggs. I've already stated that. But so Gordon Ramsay stands right in front of you, makes a dish. You get a chance to taste it. How well would you be able to do it?
You know what? I think that I could be okay at it because a lot of times when I watch like cooking shows, when I just watch it, I won't write it down or look up the recipe. I'll remember what they did and do something. I always kind of do my own take on it. But I think it might be tough to do exactly what they did. But I guess maybe if I'm thinking that. So I don't know. I mean, I think I would get a B+.
Well, that's hey. I mean, heck, that's great.
I would love to try that though. I think that's an interesting challenge.
Because this is a 3 Michelin star dish that we made.
Yeah. So, and I really want to try making this. I've seen it. I mean, the potatoes on the top that are crispy. So it's basically like almost like French fries, but right on top of the fish.
That looked awesome.
Because it sort of looks like scales.
Yes.
That's like the idea behind it, yeah.
But I would think like the challenge is, so you lay it out the scales and then you turn it over and you carefully lay it in and then cook mm-hmm. it so it gets a nice sear and stuff on there and the potatoes get nice and golden brown. But then to be able to lift it up without having those potatoes
right.
and everything just
that's,
drop
and
off.
I'm going to go home and try to make this recipe. Like something similar to this recipe because I've always wanted to try it and I've actually never done this specific dish and I've seen people make it a bajillion times and it looks really good.
Man, looked so good. I was like, oh man, I'd love to eat that dish for sure. So he did, the cool potato scales, bacon, the fish. And then everybody had to do it. Now, what it was a classic white fish. Used halibut, Yukon Gold scale, potato for the scales, and some sweet potatoes for the balls around there.
Mm-hmm.
And the couscous that was with the dish wasn't really couscous. It was made from cauliflower.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you'd be able to tell that with taste because couscous is, it's pasta.
Yeah, and now but the cool thing that was always that, as they said, while everybody was cooking, that the judges weren't expecting it to be perfect tonight because it was the first elimination challenge.
Yeah.
But as long as they had white fish, some form of potato on top, a nice couscous, and a vinaigrette balance with the puree, Gordon would be happy.
Yeah.
They could at least get those elements in.
Yeah, it was funny in the chat. They're like, I probably couldn't tell the fish, but didn't understand how they couldn't tell the sweet potatoes from carrots.
I would think that'd be a pretty obvious tell, wouldn't
it? I would think, but I would say if you're going to mistake sweet potatoes for anything, it's carrots in terms of like color and flavor. But I do think that would be, I mean, you're also under pressure.
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, you can kind of, I guess you can't really use them interchangeably, but there's a lot of similar things you can do. Well, I guess it depends. Oh, my God. I'm contradicting myself. I'm trying to, like, figure it out. But, yeah, I can see how the flavors would be similar. But, yeah.
And as we talked a little bit about having that time in the pantry, they had 5 minutes to go in and find all the ingredients they needed to make this dish. And we see Bill struggling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had 5 minutes, and he only put about 6 things in his basket. And even he's saying, like,
just, throw shit in there. Like, are you limited?
No.
Fill up your stuff. Like,
yes.
Fill it up.
Grab anything that's popping in your mind.
I need a whole fish. I need some salmon. Like, I don't even get, like, just, who cares? Just grab it. Just grab it all. Like, that's what I think.
Yeah. And because I would think, like, even if you're not sure.
I was trying to think of a really random ingredient. I couldn't.
But, like, couscous, even if you're like, maybe it's not couscous. Maybe it's, like, something. Couscous, it's something. It's cauliflower. Even if I wasn't sure, I would just grab couscous just to be on the safe side.
Just in case, like, it didn't work, too.
Yes.
That's in my mind. I'm like, why don't you, like, test things out and have extras or have, maybe, like you said, have couscous just in case the cauliflower is too mushy. Like, play it safe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's in my mind what I would do.
No.
Can you grab 2 pieces of fish or do you just get one?
I think you grab it as much as you can carry in that 5
tester,
minutes.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I would be just like loaded up like this. I mean, I would be full in that basket, then my shirt. I'd be jamming stuff in my shirt. I would bring everything I can to this. So they cook everything. Terry looking really good, though. DeAndre looking a little shaky. And Bill, what the heck is Bill doing? Bill's just a mess in there. But we see, like for example, Dan, he flipped some of the fish over and broke off some of the potato scales. You see some of the technique not really there. And then we Bill getting the food to the plate with only 1 minute to go. He's just struggling to get that all plated together. But we see Nathan going first. And as much as Wolfgang Puck gave him a little tough love, shining star. He really turned things around.
And
he really redeemed himself.
Perfect.
Yes.
It looked really good.
And as Gordon said, he got close. So, I mean, if Gordon Ramsay's telling you got close to his dish.
Michelin rated,
all right.
I mean, seriously.
I will absolutely take that. DeAndre, he ran out of time. And you don't see any style or panache on that plate.
No.
No. But Terry, I mean, you may have those big, huge hands of his there, but man, he nailed this job.
Kind of melted me a little bit, too.
Yeah.
There are certain people that you just, like, you feel that they have a good heart, and you kind of root for him.
Yes.
He kind of, I started rooting for him.
It's, I do like Dan came up, my fraternity guy. He never cooked anything this complicated. He has a college degree, so he should be able to do this.
I mean, anybody who has a college degree should be able to cook. Like, what are you thinking? Just because you have a college degree does not mean you have culinary skills. Like, what does that even mean? That's like saying, I have a college degree, so I can cut your hair. Actually, you don't have a cosmetology license, so no, you can't cut it. So, like, I don't understand that mindset. I think that's very, I don't know.
Yeah, just like a college degree is not like,
You can't just do anything. It's not magic.
I did like Gordon's response. Was, hey, this looks like a fish out on a frat party bag of puke.
Yeah.
And that Dan was not taking the competition seriously enough.
I think he acts that way out of insecurity. That's my personal opinion. I think if you have to be putting on this show and try to act like a ladies' man, it's my opinion, as an insecurity. That's how I felt, because he kind of was insecure about his dish. Like, he knew it wasn't what it needed to be, so.
Yeah, just be lippy. But I mean, I guess to his credit, even though it didn't look good, it still tasted good enough.
Yeah, that's funny. That you go, Dan is an idiot with a college degree.
Oh boy, yeah.
I know. I think he's immature, is what I think. And
for
he's got some insecurity issues.
And some people, they just really just lean on that and end up getting eliminated very early from the competition.
Mm-hmm.
And some people realize their mistakes and they kind of check their ego. Mm-hmm. And you can see them kind of grow and excel through a competition.
I feel like watching him and seeing even the first dish that he made in the, you know, to get into the show, I feel like he has potential. Like, I watch him and I see the thought process. I think his, like, when you watch him, he, like, knows what he's doing. It looks like he really loves it. I think it's just more he's trying to be this cool guy. And so I think there's something there. He's just doing a show.
Yeah, and I feel like a chef that, like, if I look at Tenoria as compared to Dan, where it seems she's more just humble in the sense where I just feel like she just wants to just, you know, cook really good food the best that way that she can.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be flashy dashy. She's not going to come in with all arrogance and all cocky,
right.
But she's just going
to
cook the best, cook from the heart.
You want to be good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I feel like Dan, I feel like if he could just check the ego, and just, you know, be a little bit more humble and just, like, you know, just accept all the criticism that he's going to get from Gordon and Christina, that he could go far, because he seems like he has some good skill set.
Right, right. I think so.
So we get two dishes at the end that they seem to think were the best. And Trey had one. And then Nathan pulls out the winning dish.
Mm-hmm.
So look at him go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as winners for those challenges, the elimination challenges, the honor for that is you get to be the captains of the team challenges for the following episode.
Not sure if that's going to be good or bad.
it doesn't seem like Nathan's going to be suited for this. He might not be a leader.
Based on the previews,
yes. The two worst, though, were Bill and DeAndre. And as they always say, it's always weird when those elimination moments happen. And Gordon will either do, like, one of you know who did the worst dish. You be a man and step up and admit that you did a terrible thing. And he did a version of that where he just says, DeAndre, are you staying or going?
Yeah. And he kind of, like, was being a wimp. I wanted to, like, smack him around. I'm like, come on, man up. Be like, yes, I'm staying. I'm staying. I have it in me. Fight.
I would love it to be Bill and have him say, yes, I'm staying. Sorry.
No, you're not. You're not staying. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's always when you ask those questions, it's always the one that you want, that you're expecting to get the yes from. But I'd love for it to be the guy that's like, no. Whoops, sorry.
That's a nice thought.
Yes. So DeAndre says yes, eventually, that he feels like he should be staying. And Bill, you may be a sweet guy, but you're dead set in your ways and you can't teach an old dog.
I know. I thought that wasn't a very nice thing to say. But maybe he was a little bit set in his ways.
Maybe. I mean, it's tough. I mean, it was just two dishes that he just seemed to kind of be struggling with. At least, you know, to kind of elevate them to MasterChef quality.
Can I totally digress for a second?
Do it.
And I was really annoyed that that girl, and I'm not going to remember her name, that did Wolfgang Puck's recipe.
Oh, yes.
The potato pancakes with the salmon and the caviar. Do your own recipe. That's not cool.
No.
Because it's totally like I just had to have a moment.
Well, yeah, but I think because if you're going to replicate somebody of Wolfgang Puck's caliber, or any kind of, you know, chef on that level, I mean, you're setting an incredibly high bar for yourself because it's got to be a bare minimum as good as that.
But someone else has perfected this recipe. That's not, you're not showing your skills. You're showing someone else's skills that's put the time and effort into creating, you know, a recipe. To create a cookbook, you test a recipe about a bajillion times to make sure it's perfect so that you're, you know, someone who's reading it who may not know how to cook anything can look at it, follow the directions, and do it. So I just didn't think that was cool. Like, I've seen that before. It was like, about two or three seasons ago on Next Food Network Star, this one really annoying guy did, they're like, he goes, yeah, I did Paula Deen's dish. And they're like, no, you can't do someone else's recipe in the show. This is about your recipe. So I just didn't like that. And then the fact that she's like still there, like, listen, you better get better the next time because you're doing other people's recipes.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the only thing that would save her in that is the fact that it tasted really good.
Because it's his recipe.
Yes, that's true.
So Wolfgang, I hope when I get a Wolfgang Puck, I'm too heated, about Wolfgang Puck cookbook, that if there's a recipe in there, I really hope that, and if I'm considered one of the top 20 home cooks in America, that I can execute it because it's a perfected recipe, tried and true perfected recipe.
Oof. All right. Look at that. Maria Provenzano soapbox moment here on MasterChef. We will have that every single week before as well. We got James with his in his out little moment, and we have Maria's soapbox. So,
Frank, we got to have something for
yes,
them.
Yes, we'll work on that. We'll for next
keep
episode.
Keep us all together and calm.
So we're going to start wrapping up the show, but we'll do a real quick prediction for... and we'll do just a quick prediction for the whole season in general. So... James.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
So our quick prediction will just be, based on who you've seen tonight, pick one person right and you think's going to go the distance.
I'm never going to say her name right. The girl who made the shrimp and grits.
Tenoria.
Yes. I have her name in my notes. Tenoria. I don't know. I really like her, and I think she has a lot of potential.
I'm going with that one as well. That was one that's part. She just seemed very genuine and just like cooking from the heart. So
yeah, so she was top of my
yeah. So
radar.
That's where I'm right now. We've called our shot. Sadly, Maria and I we called the same shot. So we have.
But let us know what you think.
Yes. Hop on, chat with us here. In fact, that's going to do it for this episode of MasterChef. So as I said, you can like us on Facebook.
Yes.
There you go. You can give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Follow us in the chat. Now, if you wanted to get in touch with Maria even after the show is over to share your thoughts about MasterChef, hit her up for great cooking recipe ideas, things like
thank
that.
You, Frank.
Where can they find you, Maria?
You can find me at Maria Provenzano on Twitter, and all of my information, including my website, will be there. Tweet me with what you guys think about the show. I want to hear it.
Yes, and just trust me, if you want to find great dishes to cook, check out our website.
Thank you.
So many great things. I can tell you they're great because I've had a chance to eat some of them. So trust me, my stomach and I give that.
I will bake next week.
That's right. We give that 5 stars. We give that my stomach and I. For me, you can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie. We will see you next week for another episode of MasterChef here on AfterBuzz TV.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.